What you are about to hear is all true, as far as can be discerned. These tapes were sent to our offices, and parts of them have been substantiated. The story may seem fanciful, and at some points stretch the bounds of credibility, as it has been told. But the original case files have been verified as real by the organizations concerned. Most of the people that wrote them are dead, missing, patients in secure facilities, or just in hiding off the grid. Those that we could contact refused to speak to us. That is understandable once you hear our story unfold. My name is Nick Parker. This is the X-Zone. Welcome to the story of the Yellow King Boogie. Let me start by introducing our guide. He says his name is Adam Jones, but I would suggest that's not a real name. He claims to have held above top secret clearance as a senior official in the Homeland Security Department of the United States federal government in the period involved. Then he was an administrative officer working for a unit within the organization called Department 13. We have never been able to establish this group's existence, except for an occasional mention within mostly redacted files. Adam sent us the tapes you are about to hear, along with support documentation and the files themselves. I have no reason to doubt them. You may wonder why he would release these files now and to an obscure journalist working on a more, well, an even more obscure podcast. I have my theories, which I will discuss later on once I am ready. Over to Adam to pick up the story.
Is this thing on? Hello? Hello? Well, the damn needle's moving, so I guess this is working. My name is Adam Jones, and I once held a senior position in the Department of Homeland Security. I am of sound mind and body, and I know what I'm doing. I'm in a secure location, and I'm off any grid where they can find me. Go ahead and try if you like. I'm ready for you. The events detailed in the official files I'm about to dictate happened. I know, as I was there at the end, when an entire city nearly fell into the hands of a dedicated and maniacal cult dedicated to the arrival of the King in Yellow. I don't give a good goddamn whether anyone thinks this is all BS. It happened, and it could happen again. That's why I'm doing this. File 1, October 8th to the 11th, 2008. Federal Bureau of Investigation. Diary entries from Senior Special Agent Walter Krueger.
These past few days, songs have been going around my head like stray socks in the dryer. First is that old song from kindergarten, Life is But a Dream. Well, I think that sums up the past couple of months since being parachuted into this swamp that they call the Crescent City, after half of the original field office were put on to administrative leave due to investigations from the Office of Professional Responsibility. So what's going on? Well, first we have a range war between two organized crime gangs. Farina on the La Cosa Nostra side versus Steno, the ghost of the bayous. The wake-up call from the dream came a few days ago when we had the chance to sweep up Boy Tesh and his crew, a wanted man and a player in Steno's organization. Unfortunately, he came and went before the cavalry from Baton Rouge could get here, but just as we were pulling off post, two of his guys decided to use the local mini-mart for target practice. The net result was two dead gangbangers, but not without drama, and why they decided to light up the neighbors is still a mystery. The next day, more bodies. These ones over a club ampersand.
A Farina-owned nightclub where Ray Negro, his bodyguard, and LCN friends, the Capelli brothers, on forced vacation from New York, at the wrong end of a bunch of shotguns, wielded, as it turns out, by Boy Tesh and his gang. Either these boys are dumb, or they just don't care. They left plenty of physical evidence of their coming and going, so we know who they are and have them banged to rights as and when we find them. Of course, no sooner than Negro and friends are cooling off in the morgue, we get more bodies, this time on Steno's side. Our guess is Farina's boys hit a cat house run by a Steno front man by the name of Jimmy Rite. Jimmy got his brains blown out on the front porch. No word on his missing doorman, though, but those bayous are deep. So we got a stack of bodies and lots of word on the street. We also have weirdness in the team going on. Special Agent Pierce swears he saw people wearing masks peeping his window. Special Agent Frost missed a briefing session in the barn because he's obsessed with drawing pictures. Special Agent Devereaux, well, she sure as shit knows something she ain't telling. And as for me, well, I have a burglar who thinks it's fun to put a full-scale marionette up in my bedroom and then remove it while I'm sleeping. They also managed to wipe my camera phone of the picture I took of it before the next day, too. I'm just putting it down to stress. So, a special agent in charge, Herlihy, got the consularies together from Steno and Farina's gang. Two attorneys of local note. Farina was even good enough to show up himself. Of course, I'd already doorstepped them. Farina's man was pretty helpful, cooperative even. Steno's man wouldn't even let me in the door. Farina has a strange backstory. Turns out he never knew his pappy was Lucky Luciano Balboni until he was in his 40s, a product of one of the summers of love in the late 60s. He spent his formative years becoming one of the better young assistant DAs in Alabama until the past caught up with him. Anyway, Herlihy's reading of the Riot Act was entertaining, but unlikely to deliver peace in our time, judging from reactions. I said that Farina's side was helpful. He said we should speak to an old man by the name of Pete Baselli. This guy is 102 years old, spends his golden years as a resident of the nursing home in Gulfport. Baselli is ex-New Orleans Police Department, had some intel on Steno, although I don't know what to make of it. Baselli was 18 in 1924, fresh in the blues, but he remembers a raid led by one Inspector LaGrasse against a cult in the bayous led by a Negro known as only as Papa Screech. Baselli seemed to imply that Steno and Screech were connected, and that Screech, who was an old man in 1924, was still around today. Senile? Delusional? Whatever. We need to check into this cult. Also, Ray Negro's password for his office computer was LaGrasse, an interesting coincidence for someone who doesn't believe in coincidence. Baselli's last words at our meeting, only two groups of folks ever stood up to Steno, the feds and the mob. Anyway, all this stuff is now on the back burner as a red ball came out of the blue. A botched surveillance of a Chechen Muslim cell in Canada that's believed to be on the move with a dirty bomb. So we're out, rattling trees and arresting every guy with a beard. Even had a stray NCIS agent assigned to the team to help cover the ground. RCMP and Homeland Security think these guys are in the final stages, so the clock is ticking. Literally. Not surprisingly, the local Farrakhanis are up in arms any time someone lays a hand on their brothers. So we're off to Jackson Square to walk the crowd, see if any of our bombers would be dumb enough to show up there. Everywhere I look, there's that yellow sign on flyers nailed to the trees. You know, it's all over the city. Been everywhere we've been. And there's that other song again. I think it's the Rolling Stones. Time is on my side.